And we'll get started. So let me just see if I can. Okay, hi everybody. Welcome to the Trade Finance bi-weekly call. I am substituting for Will today, so hopefully this won't be too painful. Let me get started by, we are recording this, and this is a Linux Foundation sponsored event, so I'm going to read the antitrust policy now. The Linux Foundation meetings involve participants by industry competitors, and it is the intention of the Linux Foundation to conduct all of its activities in accordance with applicable antitrust and competition laws. It is therefore extremely important that attendees adhere to meeting agendas and be aware of and not participate in any activities that are prohibited under applicable U.S. state and federal foreign antitrust and competition laws. Example of such types of actions are prohibited at Linux Foundation meetings and in connection with Linux Foundation activities are described in the Linux Foundation antitrust policy available at www.linuxfoundation.org/antitrust-policy. If you have any questions about these matters, please contact your company counsel, or if you're a member of the Linux Foundation, feel free to contact Andrew Updegrove of the firm of Geismar Updegrove LLP, which provides legal counsel to the Linux Foundation. Okay, so I'm going to go over to our agenda. If you just give me a moment to share my screen here, let's see how that's gonna work. Okay, well, maybe we won't share my screen right away. I am going to go to introductions to new people on the call. So if people would like to go around, I am again Bobby Mascara from Ledger Academy, and I am hosting today's call for Will. And I don't know if you guys can see my screen yet.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm going to go over to our wiki page while people introduce themselves. So feel free to jump in and state your name and why you're on the call.
So I guess I'll go first then. Hi, I'm Max from Climatics, and today I'll be presenting our interoperability protocol ION, along with my colleague Sarah, who I hope can go next.
So hi, this is Shailendra. Of course, I'm not new, but this second round of this conference, I'm currently based in India and actively participating in trade finance project. And the idea of participating here to do a knowledge share and participate. Thank you.
Hi, it's Sarah from Climatics here. Also, along with Max, be presenting the interoperability protocols. Thanks for the invite.
Hi, I'm Jim Haraska from FICC. I manage the FICC and have a bunch of years in the sec lending and repo business experience.
Hi, it's Will Lovell here. Thanks to Bobby for sharing for today. I'm in a departure lounge, so I'm going to go back on mute.
Hi, Vikram Kimiani here. Just saying hello from Oracle. So very interested in the trade finance space as I work in the financial services industry with many FS customers. Looking forward to this presentation today.
Hello, Edmund here from Hong Kong.
Hi, Edmund. Good to see you.
This is Fred from Huawei. I usually attend. I didn't attend last time, but this time I'm here. It's kind of early in the morning in the U.S., so if I'm drowsy, that's what it is.
Does anybody else want to introduce themselves? Okay, we'll be moving on to the rest of the agenda. We do have a great presentation from ClearMatics today, so I'm going to save a lot of time for that. So we do want to just talk a little bit about our future presentations and any ideas people have. I know we're planning a April 30th meeting with WeTrade, and we're still discussing presentation dates for Standard Chartered. Does anybody have any information on those two topics that they'd like to share with the group?
It's possible that only Will was doing the organization there. I do have some contacts with Standard Chartered. I don't know if they're the same people, so I'm happy to follow up if it is.
That would be great. If you could do that, we'd appreciate it, because we really want to get exciting presentations. So any connections you have, that would be wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah. Hi, it's Will here again. Standard Chartered, I'm discovering, is huge, and they've got a lot of different projects going on. So I'm speaking to a couple of guys about one of their projects, but the main one was what they're doing with DLT Ledger that I'm still pursuing. So as soon as I've got that together, we can get that scheduled. But the big news this week is I've got through to the right contact at WeTrade, and they are all lined up for 2 weeks' time on the 30th.
Great, that's wonderful. So we'll look forward to the WeTrade presentation in 2 weeks. Maybe we can advertise that to the other working groups so that they can hop on, and also get together with Standard Chartered and try to set something up for that. Any other comments on that? Okay, then we're gonna move on to the survey. I was hoping that everybody got a chance to look at it and send it in. I'm not sure if I have a link to it really readily available. Let me see if it's on our homepage. If not, I'll put the link to the survey on our homepage for those who didn't have a chance to fill it out yet. Mia, does anybody have any comments on the survey? Have they filled it out, or is it going okay? Any input?
I feel the survey. It's interesting.
Okay, good, good. As long as it's working and we know that people can get it, fill it out, and complete it, we're good to go. So if everybody gets a chance before the next call to fill it out, take your time with your answers and get it to us so that we can really direct this working group to where everybody wants it to go. Okay. Let's go back to our agenda. And does anybody have any comments on the survey before we move on? No? Okay. So the closing date is the 26th. And we will try to get the results at the April 30th meeting. So I'm going to turn it over to the people at ClearMatics. So if you'd like to grab the screen, I'm going to stop sharing, and we'd like you to take it away.
Great. Thanks, Bobby. Excuse me. Max, are you able to grab the screen? Okay, excellent. So I'll give a quick introduction to ClearMatics and who we are for those of you who don't know us, and then hand over to Max, who will take you through the ION interoperability protocol and the work we did with Hyperledger as well, Fabric. So ClearMatics, we're London-based, we're about 40 people, incorporated in 2015. We're very much a kind of core protocol technology company in the blockchain space, focusing on the financial services industry. We are the technology provider and kind of half of the visionary behind the utility settlement coin project, which initiated with our CEO Robert Sams and Haida Jeffrey from UBS, and now has expanded to I believe 15 global financial institutions. The idea behind that is to provide a settlement layer with legal settlement finality for the cash leg, using a tokenized asset which is backed one-to-one with central bank cash. That's progressing nicely, and I think we're looking at around a year for go live date, but that's TBD. Aside from that, we've got several different research areas, which I think Max will briefly go into before diving into ION. So if there's any initial questions, I'll hand over to Max.
Okay, gap awaiting initial questions over. So hi everyone, I'm Max. I'm a blockchain engineer at Climatics. So I'm joining you from the stairwell of Run EVM conference in Berlin. So pardon any particularly painful noise, but other than that, good to go. So today I'm gonna talk to you a bit about ION, which is our interoperability protocol. So the agenda is gonna be, I probably won't talk any more about Climatics since Sarah covered that, but then I'm going to speak on interoperability, why it's important from the viewpoint of Climatics at least, give you an introduction to ION, and then the reason kind of why we're on this phone call is that we are bridging, have bridged at a POC level, Ethereum and Hyperledger Fabric through ION. And then I'm just going to finish on some future work which we have to complete, and also just recap our view of the interoperability space, specifically in the enterprise blockchain DLT world. So yeah, as Sarah said, we're a London-based blockchain R&D company with 40 plus staff, blah, blah, blah. USC is our flagship project. Okay, so I did that bit. So obviously we're an active member of the community, which is why I'm joining you from Berlin, and there you can see us all very, very happy, which is how I would describe us in Denver. And yeah, we go to lots of conferences. And then, as Sarah touched on in her introduction, there's three principal areas where we perform R&D. So there's privacy. So that's how we can obscure things or not obscure things, depending on the use case for our blockchain. Consensus, which is how the blockchain propagates blocks and decides on blocks. And then the most important one, from my point of view, interoperability. So just a little bit about privacy. So recently we've open sourced our kind of one of our biggest R&D projects. It's something called Zeeth, which implements zero cash in an Ethereum smart contract. And this is a really interesting project, and you guys should check it out. I will caveat that it's a POC level, but it's displaying that we can use zero knowledge proofs to transfer ERC20 tokens between counterparties on an Ethereum blockchain. And I think that is really, really interesting. And it's not extremely efficient computationally yet, but it's definitely is one of the leading projects in this space out there. Previously, we'd released Mobius, which is kind of a, well, which is a tumbling service using ring signatures. So you can obfuscate who paid who in a big tumbler, which is another approach to privacy and is also complements the work being performed for ETH. And then other ways we use, well, it's not particularly privacy, but we're looking into using zero knowledge proofs to improve scalability of our blockchain platform. Then we also work on consensus. So we have our own client, Autonity, which is based on Go Ethereum and complies with some EEA specifications. And it's running a Byzantine fault-tolerant consensus algorithm. We also have our own implementations of network permissioning and governance at both the network and the consensus level, which means we can block who can join a network, but also who can create and validate blocks within that as well. So they're two different things. So then the main topic of today is our third research stream, which is in interoperability. So first, maybe we should talk about the view of kind of the future of financial market infrastructure from like how we see it at Climatics. And that we can see lots of different heterogeneous, which I like the big word, member-owned and governed networks. So you can see on the left or right, I think, I hope, we have a diagram of like three different circly things, and they're kind of representing different blockchains. They might be all one type, they might all be Ethereum. One might be more appropriate to be Fabric, one might be a Corda maybe, or they might not even be blockchains per se or DLTs, they might be legacy systems. But we see a future where there's not just one big fat thing ruling them all. There's gonna be lots of different platforms which all will have their, you know, their own characteristics, and we should be able to use the appropriate platform for the right functionality. So, you know, maybe an Ethereum thing is more useful in for cash settlement because you have global state, whereas, you know, because of the flexibility of Hyperledger Fabric's chain code, then it might be more it might be more useful in workflowing internally in investment banks and prime brokerages. Like, that's not, like, I'm not saying that's true. I'm just saying that's, you know, one way we view it, that there's going to be different platforms running and they'll all have their own characteristics and their own requirements and they'll be different. So obviously, if we want to have this, you know, future ecosystem of different platforms, then data is going to have to flow between all these different platforms. And that's why interoperability is extremely important to us. However, we don't just want to have interoperability where we introduce new intermediaries between these kind of islands. We don't want to have single points of failures, or so SPOF or SPOTS. We don't want those. So we need something that allows us to move data between different platforms with different security properties, but should do that trustlessly or without relying on someone who can man in the middle attack us. So, okay, obviously we're not the first people to have thought about interoperability. So in the crypto space, which is kind of more where we come from, you know, people might say, well, just use Bitcoin. And obviously Bitcoin is a really interesting technology in that it allows you to do uncensored payments. But it doesn't really let you do anything but payments, which obviously for the trade finance people is not that helpful. You don't just want to pay each other. You want to make, create other products. Other people might say use a single platform or one type of platform. So people at Cosmos and R3 might say that. And whilst that's, you know, it's definitely a very practical approach, we're not sure for the robustness and the resiliency of our future financial market infrastructure, that's something that's wholly desirable. Like, it might be good to have, you know, certain larger networks which take up a big market share, but we don't want to have just one network. Then, you know, there's other things like bridge cryptocurrencies like Ripple XRP, which is of interesting legal standing. We maybe wouldn't say that's the greatest thing. Another thing which we've explored as well at Climatics is, you know, use case specific interoperability, which is great. So there's things like atomic swaps where you can transfer one token on one chain for another token on another using things like hash time locks, which is really great. But the only problem is then every time you have a new use case, you have to develop a new form of interoperability. So that really kind of slows progress. It means, you know, you build interoperability in with every use case. And that's not good for building many, many use cases and allowing developers to work on it. So then there's the FIS, I think, kind of way of performing interoperability, which is similar to having a single platform, but there's also having interoperable protocols. And so that might be something like Cosmos or Polkadot, where they say, this is the, you know, kind of all like the internet more generally is kind of one interoperable protocol, where you define what the messages are that platforms pass between each other, which is good, but then that means you're only interoperable within your species. And moving outside of your species, you retain the same problems of interoperability, which from my view isn't so great, because then, okay, we have this new platform, but now we want to go to, you know, the old platform. So then you have to, you would have to throw all the legacy away, and that clearly isn't going to happen. So that leads us on to ION. So what is ION? ION, we say, a general interoperability protocol. So it's general in the sense that it's not just for blockchains, and it's not just for use cases, any specific use case. And we say it's state-based interoperability because we take the state of one platform. So a platform might be a blockchain, a DLT, an SQL server for all I care, and we transfer it from one platform to the other platform in a verifiable way that is relevant to the two platforms you're interoperating with. And so that means it's trustless. And the state can be taken from my one platform over to the other, and I know I can go on my second platform and say, okay, what was the state of the first platform? And oh, I've got it, and I know it's going to be real. And also it's not reliant on tokens or incentive mechanisms, so that, you know, it's very popular in the crypto space now to use incentive mechanisms and game theory to build your interoperability. And I think that can work, but when the values are as high as are in the, you know, in our financial markets, the incentives to then cheat or the incentive mechanisms have to be ever stronger, and you know, I think they become more brittle. So that's not a route we want to go down either. And also no ICO. So what is Ion? What does that mean, though? Like, in terms of the code, what is it? So we have an expanding library of interfaces which allow different platforms. So we have for Ethereum, for Fabric, maybe in the future for Burrow, we have libraries with interfaces which allow developers to know, okay, if I set up a bridge between two platforms, which are, you know, a specific platform, and this is the interface I need to use to query data from that platform. And what this does is kind of what I alluded to in the use case specific interoperability. What we didn't want to have is we've now segregated the movement of state from chain A to chain B and the development of use cases on top of that. And we think that's very powerful because that means that people who are building the use cases, so, you know, the business people and, you know, their development teams can really focus on, all right, well, this is the new use case we find and we want to develop that. And then the people who have to understand the protocols and how to verifiably move the data, they focus on that. And that means everyone can do what they're best at and we can hopefully progress further. So then talking about the core protocol. So this is not the building the use cases on top of. So once I've taken state from blockchain A and passed it to blockchain B, then I can, you know, build my use case on top of that. But the fundamental part is I have state validation. So I'm on blockchain A and that has a state. I take that state, I pass it to blockchain B. And we have a validation layer. So this might be a smart contract or chain code, or it might just be, you know, some logic you have in your other platform. And that will say, okay, given these requirements, given this consensus mechanism, is this a real block and should I accept it? And that's one part. So, okay, we've taken a block and passed it from A to B. And now that block contains some information. You know, was there a payment? Did we open a trade? Something like this, something that caused a state transition, which says, okay, what has happened? And we need to first take a block and verify that it's a real block. And then we need to go, okay, well, what has happened in that block and what are we going to do about it? And there used to be a picture here which described that, which had that nicely, but it hasn't seemed to rendered. I blame my laptop for that. So, okay. So those are the two things which we have to do. But, like, obviously, that's a lot. And what does that actually mean in terms of we have things? So here on the right-hand side, you can see we've got platform A, platform B, and platform C. And they're deliberately named kind of neutrally because this could be, okay, platform A could be an Ethereum chain, but platform B could be a Hyperledger Fabric network. Yeah? So then we take a function, so chain code, we execute something on the chain code. That transaction is included in the state on platform B. That state or that block is then moved to the validation contract on platform A. That validation contract does what we say in this slide, so it does a state validation. And it says, okay, is this block real? Do I trust it? Do I know about it? And so then once it said, okay, this is something we know about, it accepts it and it stores it in the block storage. So it passes it to the Ion contract, which is there just to do the management of various different chains. And it passes it to the block storage contract B. And so once it's been verified and then persisted in the block storage contract or chain code, then people who are building use cases can query that block storage contract and say, okay, I think this transaction happened. And it should have this data. Did it happen? If it happened, do something. If it didn't happen, don't do something. And that's the way we view interoperability. So you could see platform C could be an SQL database, which has some, you know, Merkle root. And every time someone appends something to the Merkle root, they pass that to the state. And then that gets moved to the validation contract. And that the validation contract might just verify the signature of the organization that is running that SQL server, and then we can persist that and query that just as if it was a Fabric network or anything else you can imagine. Okay, there are some limits to that, but even, you know, Bitcoin. So then now on to the interesting bit. So we have done a proof of concept, and then it's been developed further, moving on, bridging Ethereum and Fabric. So, but first we should maybe do a little look into the key differences of Fabric and Ethereum. So obviously, when as I've described, when bridging two platforms, you really have to understand the platforms you're working with. So, in terms of Hyperledger, you need to understand the consensus. So, we need to understand how Solo works, which is as far as we've gone in our proof of concept, but which we will then move further to Kafka, so that when we take blocks from the state of the Fabric network and pass them to the Ethereum network, we know how to work with it to ensure that it was really from that chain. So then there's another number of key differences. So there's global state in Ethereum of all the transactions, which isn't true necessarily in Hyperledger Fabric, because you can change the network somehow. There's different ways identity work. So these are all different things you have to understand. And then obviously there's the permissioning. So in Ethereum, we have at least permissioning on all different levels, whereas in Hyperledger, it works slightly differently in that, you know, you have to already be a member to even submit transactions to the network, or unless you go through your admin node, but that's something different. And obviously there's some differences in that in Ethereum, we have, okay, we have Solidity, we have Viper as programming languages, but in Hyperledger Fabric, you can code in high-level languages, so Go, JavaScript, which does have some implications that you really have to ensure that in Hyperledger Fabric that your code isn't going to do any non-deterministic computation. So what have we done? So obviously, many of you know about Hyperledger Fabric, and so Hyperledger Fabric has slightly different network topology to Ethereum, and it also uses different elliptic curves. So what we're doing is when we're taking blocks from Hyperledger Fabric, we know the public key of the orderer, and so what we pass the block to the Ethereum smart contract, and it verifies that that block was signed by the orderer. So to do that, and to ensure that we're not making our interoperability predicate on any precompiles in the Ethereum client, we've had to build a smart contract that can verify the P256 SecP256 R1 elliptic curve. But also, Fabric is entirely, it leverages really well the Google protobuf. And so what we need to do is we have a smart contract which can then consume different protobuf messages to know whether, okay, so we pass a protobuf message which is the block, which is then decomposed by the smart contract. And we say, okay, was this signed by the orderer? And we go, yes, this was signed by the orderer. And then we have to go to the transactions and use the protobuf smart contract to decompose the transactions and see, okay, well, is the chain code policy for this type of transaction, is this enforced, yes or no? And then do something or don't do something. So they're the first two layers. This is why it's a proof of concept layer, because lots of things have to be hard-coded. For example, chain code policy is at the moment very simple. So what we need to do to truly make the two platforms interoperable, firstly, we need to make a chain code policy currying smart contract, which will allow us to, given the endorsement policy of a specific chain code, generate the Solidity smart contract, which allows us to verify any arbitrary endorsement policies. So much like in Hyperledger Fabric now, when you deploy the chain code to your node, you say what the policy is. We need to be able to do that so that we can decompose it in Ethereum. Additionally, we need to write the Ethereum block validation chain code. That means that so that when we pass Ethereum blocks to Hyperledger Fabric, that it can read, validate, and then perform computation on Ethereum blocks. And this will probably be slightly more trivial than going from Fabric to Ethereum due to the ability to use high-level languages. And then lastly, we need to develop further use cases. So that's one main motivation of this call, is to really start people thinking, okay, well, what are the applications of Hyperledger Fabric and of Ethereum, and what are the differences? Why would we want to have two networks interoperating? Sorry, that really struggled to come out then. And so get the use cases bubbling. So everything that is to do with Ion is in our nicely named Ionosphere. And so as of yet now, we have an Ethereum to Ethereum bridges. So for two different consensus mechanisms, so Clique proof of authority and Istanbul Byzantine fault tolerant consensus. Then we also, for the Hyperledger Fabric, as I kind of just described, have the bare bones to validate blocks from a solo chain or a solo consensus fabric network. But we obviously need to extend that as described to Kafka as well, which is we're hoping to have some expertise or to work with people who have expertise in this area. Another thing we'd like to touch upon also is we've recently run a hackathon called Hackion, and the most interesting project for this phone call potentially is that of Santander. So Santander did debt issuance on a Fabric network. So I'm not a finance guy, so I don't really quite understand. But what they did is they issued that on the Fabric network, and then once both counterparties had agreed, that transaction was transferred via Ion to an Ethereum network, and then had the debt settled or was to be settled at a certain block height, depending on what was doing. And so that shows that Santander definitely big advocates of, they used Hyperledger Fabric to do something like this, which shows there are definitely use cases for interoperability between Hyperledger Fabric and Ethereum. So then just recapping kind of what I would like people to take away from this, from Climatic and Ion, so that we definitely see lots of different platforms running in the future distributed financial market infrastructure. So as I've said many, many times on this call, that there's not just one platform to rule them all. You know, there's going to be intra-jurisdictional, intra-use case, intra-institutional platforms, and they should not be the same for resiliency reasons alone. And also, I think there needs to be a recognition that lots of platforms, like we say blockchain, but you know, the truth is there's big differences between Fabric and Ethereum. There's big differences between Burrow and Ethereum. There's big differences between Burrow and Fabric, and so on. And I think this needs to be recognized that different parts of the financial markets will need different blockchains, and you can't just insert one for the other. It's not just not the same. That we should always use the appropriate platform for our specific use case. But that the key message then for interoperability is that we need to use interoperability to allow us to do this, because if we can't use the best platform for the job, we're going to have to use some compromised platform. So interoperability allows us to use the best platform for the job and not just use one platform that kind of does everything and, you know, meh. So I hope you've enjoyed that, and I hope it wasn't too quick. I noticed my battery's running out, so I've got 8 minutes. So if anyone has any questions or can tweet us and anything, I open the floor to questions.
Wow, that was definitely eye-opening. I really like your insights into how people are going to have to work together on the best blockchain for the job. And it's exciting that the legacy systems aren't going to be ignored. So anybody have any questions, please ask them quickly before the battery runs out.
Oh, hi, Max. This is Shailendra. So what I understand, currently you've created a bridge between Ethereum and the Fabric. So how long it has taken to create this bridge, and what is your next plan? Like what is the other chain you're going to create the bridge for? Yeah.
So we had a bit of an incubation process because we set ourselves the ambitious deadline of just before Christmas of having the hackathon where an initial proof of concept needed to be ready. So 3 months it took to really understand what was going on in Hyperledger and then build the relevant smart contracts. And even then it was slightly compromised. So what went on in the hackathon had a bit more hard coding than you'd like, but we've since developed that. For developing the, you know, Ion further, the problem with interoperability I find is that interoperability comes because you have a use case. And so, you know, from Climatics' view and the USC project, some parts of that has influenced some of the development of Ion. And then as other people have come to us with other ideas, then we've moved it further. And we really saw that Fabric, why we chose Fabric above, you know, other platforms, is that it has, you know, lots of POCs and also, you know, a big developer community. So that was one reason why we chose Fabric over anything else for the, like, after Ethereum. But then moving further, it would really, from my view, and would depend on the use cases, because I think that's what influences interoperability the most, is like a need and a use case.
Okay, thank you.
I've got a question. It's Vikram from Oracle. How much of the protocol is open source? Is it open source or is it?
All open source.
Okay. All right. In terms of your, I think in the next stage, you're going to work with Kafka. How close are you to that? Do you know?
Well, due to some other commitments, so I've moved on slightly, but I think we'll return to it as resources are more available.
Okay.
But if you have someone who can help us, then you know, we're really open for people to work with. This isn't a project we're trying to like sell. This is something we think is important for us, but we can scratch each other's backs.
Yeah, to me it sounds very interesting. Like Will, I found the Santander use case interesting. So using Fabric for the workflow and Ethereum for the settlement, I could see that happening. So yeah, let me ask around inside to see who's got. We've got certainly Kafka people. I can see whether they would be interested in trying to make this work with Kafka.
Definitely, that'd be great.
Yeah, Vikram, that sounds great. If you see on the screen the slide that Max is sharing there, our GitHub address, if you put /ion after Climatics, you should get straight to the interoperability open source code. But yeah, I mean, we're certainly open to collaborations with people with existing expertise in those kind of consensus mechanisms or even the platform itself, chain code.
Cool. I'm curious, have you guys come across interoperability between, let's say, Fabric to public Ethereum mainnet of use cases?
It's not something I've seen. Max, is that something that you've come across? I wonder if maybe we've lost Max. I will check with Max offline, but yeah, like I say, the Fabric to Ethereum mainnet is not something that springs to mind. I could have a look around though. Could you see a particular use case for that?
Not that I see, but I'm just quite curious. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Does anybody have any more questions? I know Will wanted to mention in the chat that he really wanted to thank Max and Sarah for coming on the call, and that Santander project sounds very interesting. If we can get more information on that possibly for one of our future calls, I think that would be a great idea. So I'm just going to open the floor again to any more questions. Okay, then moving on with our agenda. Next is our meeting is April 30th, where we'll have the presentation from WeTrade. Hopefully we'll have the results of the survey. I did put it in the chat. If anyone didn't get it in their email, it's in the chat. Please fill that out so that we can get that done by the 26th. I thank everybody for being on the call, especially Will for letting me step in for him. Big shoes to fill. I hope I did an okay job. And we look forward to him coming back in 2 weeks. Any more questions?
No. Thank you.
Okay, everybody have a great week, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks.
Great, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, it was a great presentation.
Yeah. Bye-bye.